Tuned in to Community Radio, WPVMLP, Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7, streaming online, WPVMFM.org, the voice of Asheville, heard all over the world.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. For Easter, expect showers and a chance of a storm early, plus some morning fog, then drying out this afternoon with highs near 63. A breeze picks up at times with gusts near 20 miles per hour. Partly cloudy tonight with lows around 38 and gusts near 30 miles per hour. Monday looks sunny with highs near 64, then partly cloudy Monday night near 39. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
When systems fail, where do you turn for truth and resilience? Welcome to the Resilience Realm with host Dawn Westmoreland, Air Force veteran, author, and resilience advocate. Each week, Dawn brings powerful voices, attorneys, mental health experts, veterans, and leaders sharing courage, boundaries, and real-world resilience strategies. Broadcast on the Pacifica Network and WPVM-FM and featured on over 100 radio, TV, and podcast platforms nationwide. This isn't just a show. It's a movement for courage, ethics, and justice. Tune in Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern or listen anytime online. Visit DawnMarieWestmoreland.com.
So glad to be with you. I'm Dawn Westmoreland with producer, educator, entrepreneur, media executive, philanthropist, Peter Samuelson today. What an honor. If you've never heard of him, my goodness, what a shock. Because he's been a film producer, an executive producer of 25 motion pictures over 25 years, including Arlington Road, Revenge of the Nerds, which I just watched last week, Wild, Tom and Viv, The Libertine, Stormbreaker, production manager of Return of the Pink Panther. I know, everyone, you've heard one of these movies. Welcome, Peter.
Well, the honor is mine, and hello to all my friends in Asheville and elsewhere.
Yes. Finding Happy is your newest book that you just put out. What made you become inspired to write Finding Happy, Peter?
Well, you mentioned the film career, which obviously is how I've paid the mortgage and raised four kids and all of that. However, there's a whole other career in parallel, which is I'm the founder and the warrior and the nurturer of seven individual nonprofits, charities. Three of them are very big and the others are getting there. The Starlight Children's Foundation, the one that I founded with Steven Spielberg and others, has raised and spent well over $1 billion. That's billion with a B. We're in Australia, Canada, United States, UK. And I've gone on from there. The third charity is called First Star. And what we do is to house, educate, and encourage high school-aged foster kids on the campuses of big universities for a four-year period, grades 9 through 12. And then we go on and 89% of them in the most recent stat go on to colleges and universities against a benchmark for American foster kids of 9%. So it's 10x, the 10 times the benchmark. Now, in the process of running that as its founder president, I've done so much mentoring. We have about 1,000 kids of various ages, grade levels in the program. I haven't mentored 1,000, but I've mentored over time hundreds and hundreds. And I developed, this is about 2 years ago, I realized I got kind of pattern recognition now. I know what they want to talk about. I'm being bullied. What should I do? My math teacher hates me. I've lost the plot in English classes. My parents don't understand me. And, you know, there's a list of about 25 things. And I realized what I can do is I could write a book. I could do a kind of self-help book. And I called it Finding Happy because in the end, what is everybody trying to do? What are we all trying to do? And what resilience to me is about, it's the gap between where you are and where you want to be. And that gap is called finding happy, because if you are happy, then your resilience worked and you are in the direction. Maybe you haven't got all the way there. You have the whole rest of your life to get there, but at least you feel that you're on the path. So what I did is I made a list of 25 or so things that are really, you know, perplexing to young adults. And when I say young adults, I mean really Gen Z, you know, maybe 15 to 25 years old. So I wrote this book and it occurred to me, I've made every mistake that a human being can make over an extended lifetime, thank God. And I could illustrate the book. So, for example, there's a chapter that's called What is a Good Risk? What is a Bad Risk? How can you tell the difference? It's very difficult when you're, you know, 20 years old. So I thought, well, I've nearly killed myself twice, seriously. I could punch up the narrative by giving examples of either funny or scary or, you know, stuff that's happened to me, including where I completely failed. So that's what I did. So I finished the manuscript by getting up for a year at 5 o'clock in the morning. I made myself write for an hour. And then I got a book agent and I expected nothing. I thought he was going to phone me back and say, no one wants your book. I suggest you publish it on you know, Amazon and pay Amazon to do it. No, he got a little bit of a bidding war going. And Simon & Schuster Regalo bought it. It was the number one nonfiction book this last summer on bulk books, which is good because it's where schools and universities buy books in multiple copies at a time in a big box, which means it goes on the curriculum and so forth. It's doing very well. It's on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. It's in bookstores. I did a wonderful tour of the United States and the UK, bookstore to bookstore, signing my books, you know, invited all the local First Star Academy young adults to come and did seminars with them. And I put my email address towards the end of the book. You have to really read the book to find it. The publisher thought I was raving mad. They said, you'll get thousands of emails. And I said, well, I'll have to hire dozens of assistants and we will reply. And haven't had thousands, but I've had a few hundred and I've been replying to them. And of course, they're incredibly smart. And I love interacting with young adults. Our civilization, whatever you believe politically, doesn't matter. We only have one future, which is our young people. And if we're not lifting them up, what are we here for? You know, finding happy in the end means helping other people. I absolutely believe there's a chapter in the book that's called Selflessness Can Be Selfish, and that is just fine. And I believe that profoundly. I believe for a young person who is wrapped up in their interlocking awful challenges, which seem insurmountable, and what is my life for? And these people hate me, and what am I going to do? I think, I know it's counterintuitive, go volunteer. Volunteer at your church, volunteer at the local soup kitchen, go and march up and down and support something, go and help those less fortunate to you. In First Star, I only teach two classes because they're the only two I'm qualified as a filmmaker, if you like, to teach. One of them is videography, because if I can't teach that, nobody can. And so I do that. But the other one, the one that gives me the joy, I invented a course. It's two 90-minute classes. It's called Random Acts of Kindness and Pay It Forward. And what I do, I sit there with either 30 or if it's a double class, 60 teenagers, you know, grade 10, maybe grade 11. And I say, You're walking down the sidewalk. There's an old lady in rags, fast asleep, face down, with her arm, you know, under her head, on the sidewalk in front of you. You have three choices. Explain to me which you do and why the people who do the other two choices, why do they do those? Choice one, stop, wake her up, give her a dollar or two. Choice two, don't wake her up, but put a dollar or two under her arm. She'll find it. Choice three, do neither, walk straight on by, leads to a very vigorous conversation, which I then steer towards the meaning of life. What is the golden rule? And of course, the golden rule is in 174 world religions. And basically, it says that human beings, when they see something that is unjust, that is unfair, they have an instinct to fix it. And we all have that. And we have a robust conversation about that. And then I say, what if someone was an atheist? Does that mean they would never stop and help the old lady? And they say, no, absolutely. An atheist could feel that in their heart of that it's unjust, unfair, out of balance, out of whack. And I say, yeah, who can tell me what is the second law of thermodynamics? And there's usually in a class of 30, there's usually two or one. And I say, okay, go ahead and explain it. And of course, it's the theory. It's not a theory. It's a law. It's truth in science. It's entropy. If you do not tend to and put external energy into any closed system in the universe, over time, it will fall to bits. What is a closed system? Well, the engine in your car, if you don't oil it, eventually it won't go round. And then I say, what if it was something like a family? Oh, yeah, family is a closed system. If you don't nurture your family, you won't have a family. We know about that, say the foster kids. And then we talk about that. And then I say, you want to come to the class tomorrow because something remarkable is going to happen to you. Because of a lovely man in Dallas called Mort Meyerson, who has donated money to First Star, each of you is going to get $200. And they say, we're going to get $200? And I say, well, you can't keep it. You have to write 300 words. To whom or to what do you wish it to go? Think carefully, because we're going to go and do it. And a couple of weeks later, we're going to go back and we're going to see, did the unhoused gentleman buy the shoes that you wanted him to buy? Or did he go and buy a big bottle of brandy? Because sometimes philanthropy doesn't work. And we actually do it. Some of these little mini essays are remarkable. My name is Jose. I'm adding $10 of my own because that makes 210, which is 3 times 70. $70 is what you have to pay the animal shelter for them not to euthanize a dog. And I am going to save three puppies because the last time I was down there, I looked into the eyes of a puppy that had been very badly beaten. And I saw my own eyes because I was very badly beaten as well. Love, Jose. And we did it. Or how about this one? My mom is in prison for another 2 years, 7 months, and 3 days. They always know exactly the remaining incarceration for their relative, parent, somebody they care about. She did some terrible things, including to me, and that's why she's in prison. But I still love her, and I know she hates the shampoo, so I'm going to put the money in her prison account so that she can buy better toiletries. Love, Sheila. So, and we actually do it. So what is the meaning of life? What is my book, Finding Happy, about? It's about various ways to lift up the world and in doing that to have enormous advantage. I met my wife at the very first meeting, which I called of the Starlight Children's Foundation. I had her there because I needed an accountant. And when the lawyer said, okay, so I should incorporate this thing to make seriously ill children happy, what do we want to call it? And I said, oh, I haven't given that any thought at all. What do we want to call it, people? And it was the accountant, very pretty young lady, who said, you know, that children's rhyme, starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight, I wish I may, I wish I might, have this wish, I wish tonight. And she said, why don't we call it the Starlight Children's Foundation? And we all said, yeah, that's great. And I had a graphic designer there, because you usually need one of them as well, you know, for the website or whatever. And she said, I can see the logo in my mind's eye. It's a child reaching for a star. Here we are all these years later, still the logo of the Starlight Children's Foundation. And I dated that young lady, and I fell in love. I can even tell you when I fell in love. We had a Christmas party for seriously ill kids in the children's ward at County USC Medical Center. And we had a live band, and we had kids in the auditorium, you know, jumping up and down and dancing in their smocks and so forth. But there were some kids who were so ill that they couldn't get out of bed, and they'd been wheeled in on these gurney things. And one of them was a little girl who was so into the music that she was dancing in bed horizontally. And we had these adult-sized animal costumes that I got donated by SeaWorld. And one of them was a dolphin. And in the chest of the dolphin was a little grill where you could see the face of the adult inside it. And I looked into the grill of the dolphin, and I saw in there the accountant, who I was by then dating, and she was terribly moved by the little girl dancing in bed. And all the mascara had passed the grill. You could see that all her mascara had run, because she was weeping big weepy tears. And I, honest to goodness, I looked into the grill and I thought, oh, my God, I think I love this person. And, you know, we had some more dates, and eventually I went down on one knee and I proposed, and we got married, and she's the mum of my children, and, you know, the rest is history. So I've walked that walk, and my message to Asheville and the world beyond is, if you want to find your happy, apart from buying my book on Amazon, Finding Happy, how do you really do it? Go help someone. Volunteer. Watch how fast you get promoted in a charity. Anyone who dares raise their hand in a meeting and say, I have an idea, you become the vice president of implementing that idea in about 10 minutes flat. You meet amazing people. You want to find someone to love. What are you going to do? Seriously, 2026, how to find someone to love and be loved by. You're going to go to a bar and get drunk and meet them there. Oh, that's a really good way to do an interview to find yourself a mate. Wrong. You're going to flip left and right on images on an app. Okay. Well, you realize that there's a lot of AI going on there. And when you meet for the coffee, they don't look anything like that. I hope that'll be okay for you. So what do you do to find someone with the goal of falling in love, building a life together, all those important good things, maybe even having some kids? Go volunteer. Look to the left, look to the right. Who are these people? Number one, they care about what you care about. That's why you're all here on a Sunday afternoon. Secondly, you get to know them through shared activities. Take them out for a coffee after a bit of volunteering. You've got something to talk about. You have common ground. I think that's one way that you do it, but that's only one of the very important ways to find happy. Yeah, you got to have someone who loves you unconditionally and that you can love unconditionally, even though they're flawed, even though you're flawed, because that's what love is, actually. It's getting past the little hiccups and finding the greater, you know, common interest and support and nurture. I think we all need that in our lives. And I think in finding happy, doing it with someone next to you, with their arm around you, is an enormous blessing in your life. And you can't sometimes get there in one move. You have to, you know, experiment a bit, play the field, see who you're most compatible with. But I can tell you this, when you fall in love, you know it. It's like a big fright that happens to you, but in a good way. And the book is not just about that. It's also got chapters like how to get arrested without being shot dead. A huge advantage for a young adult, you know, early 20s, maybe, especially a young man. Their prefrontal lobe hasn't developed yet, so they're not really processing risk terribly well. They're operating their life on the amygdala, the back of the brain, the reptilian back, fight or flight. And quite often you get it wrong. I mean, I nearly died twice by doing incredibly stupid things, which I knew were stupid. When I examined what I had done the next morning, I should never have done them. But I did, and somehow I survived. That's what the book's about. That's my thesis. That's where I'm at, age 74. You know, what makes a life? What do they put on your tombstone? What do you want them to put on your tombstone? He died with a lot of money. He made some films. I don't think so. Neither of them, you know, amount to a hill of beans. What you really want is he stood up for children. He left the world a better place than he found it. She was an amazing mother. She raised great kids and grandkids. Those are the important things in life. It's what you do that helps other people. And in doing that, yeah, it is also selfish, and that's just fine.
Peter, you have the biggest heart, and you are the most humblest person I know.
Well, you don't know very many people then.
I know a lot of people. So our listeners always love success stories. Can you share any success story without, you know, violating their privacy? Somebody that you've helped that is had a hard time and is now doing so well, thriving?
Sure. Well, what jumps into my head, obviously, is an example of the work we do in First Star. So Alex, he's over 18 now. I could even say his name. He's one of my favorite people in the world. Alex Ballantyne joined us as a foster kid into ninth grade years ago now. And he thrived as soon as unconditional love descended on his shoulders from his peers and from staff and from volunteers in First Star, that he was in the academy at UCLA. Those 4 years, we watched him sort of flourish and grow as a human being. And he went on to the University of California in Santa Barbara. But right before that, we thought he was so splendid that I asked him if he would join our national board. You know, a little counterintuitive, such a young man. And then things started going wrong for him. No fault of his. He finally found a good foster home, a good family in Pacific Palisades a year and a bit ago. And in the Pacific Palisades forest, you know, the wildfire, their whole house burned to the ground. They had to run away. He's a trumpeter, a jazz trumpeter. His trumpet melted in the ashes of their home. So we had to get involved and help him get a new trumpet. He was left with only the clothes on his back, so he had to buy new clothes, and we helped him and so on and so forth. But he is thriving, and he is already a splendid human being of high accomplishments. And let him, you know, get his undergraduate, maybe a graduate degree, and play in the jazz band. There's nothing the matter with American foster kids. That love and encouragement and good, excellent academics and life skills, because nobody bothers to teach them life skills. The system is there to keep them away from more harm, whatever the harm was that drove them into foster care. But we do much more than that. We say, what does this kid need? What do any of our children need? Your nieces, your nephews, your children, your grandchildren. It only begins with, you know, keep them safe and teach them math. It goes on into where will they excel? You know, how do you raise a child? Oh, I see you sitting at the piano, plonking out notes when you don't know what you're doing. You know, we could get you piano lessons. You could actually learn to play tunes. You know, that is the first conversation with every great pianist or not so good pianist. Don't ask me about my grandson's violin classes because that didn't work out so well. The worst sound I've ever heard in my life. But I love him. And, you know, he's a black belt in karate. He's doing really, really well. And in scuba diving, he's now really young. He's a full-on deep sea scuba instructor. So, you know, you find every young person, the privilege of being young, if you're in a good environment, is to be able to experiment. It's kind of like I say in one of the classes, you know, it's like you're sitting cross-legged in the dark in an envelope and you have a pencil. Well, you can just sit there and do nothing. Don't get up. Don't move. Don't find out where the edge is. Or you can poke with the pencil. Try this, try that. And sure, every once in a while, you'll go through the envelope and you'll say, whoops, I guess I will never be a concert pianist. But the privilege is you can pull the pencil back and poke it in a different direction until you find your groove. And once you find your groove, which I'm influencing you by saying to find your groove, to find your happy, it must have an element of helping other people. Go volunteer down at your church or your mosque or your synagogue or your temple or whatever it is. They will bite your arm off if you go down and say, can I help some way? Same thing, every charity in your neighborhood, whether it's the soup kitchen or you're going down to help, you know, with animals at the pound, or you're working on, you know, cleaning up the beach or climate change, or whatever rings your bell, and try several until you find something you're passionate about, and then tell lots of other people and recruit them too, and look left and look right and say, oh, I guess I found my people. All we're doing for foster kids in firststar.org is we're helping them find their people, and with some, you know, really good academics thrown in, we're better than to have them, even though they're grades 9 through 12. You know, they are physically on the campus of a university. You want to learn math? We have math teachers, etc. And life skills? Nobody ever taught them to brush their teeth. Nobody ever taught them the difference between a credit card and a debit card and how to do a budget and all this stuff that, you know, we who are lucky to be middle class, we all, if we were raised by even halfway decent parents or family, we know all this stuff. Foster kids don't know it because the system stops at saying, you were being molested, you will never be molested again. Meet your new home. And they keep them safe. And then at 18, they say, you know, have a nice life. Put your stuff in the black trash bag. Let us know how you're doing. Send us a postcard. We start there. We start with how can you find happy? And that actually is what we all need to do. And I wrote the book. I was going to call it What I Know Now That I Wish I Knew When I Was 18. But the publisher said that's much too long. So we ended up calling it Finding Happy.
Yes. What do you hope that people get out of your book? And we're down to the last minute.
I hope they find they're happy. And in fact, I can kind of guarantee that they will, because I've got the emails to prove it. There are tried and true, you know, rules of the road. Be organized. Do a spider graph of your challenges. Work out who are the adults who can mentor you, who are safe, and on and on and on and on. Get yourself sorted out. Don't do your homework on the bus as you were arriving at school to hand it in. Do it on the day they give it to you, so you'll be the only kid in the class that doesn't have to worry about it for the following week. That kind of thing. There's a lot of pragmatic help. but there's also, you know, reach into lifting up the world. The world needs lifting up. There are terrible people